The following program is a paid advertisement. The views reflected on this show are not necessarily the views of ESPN 1000.
Doctor?
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 You're listening to Sports Medicine Weekly with Steve Cashel and Dr. Brian Cole on ESPN 1000.
Sports Medicine Weekly being brought to you by MedWest Associates, the number one choice for advanced orthopedic solutions, innovative products, and superior customer service. By Accelerated Rehabilitation Centers, putting patients first. By Theratech Equipment, a winning team for fast and complete recovery. By Midtown Athletic Club Oak Park, your place for small group fitness and sports performance training. And by Midwest Orthopedics at Rush, team physicians of the Chicago Bulls, White Sox, and DePaul University Athletics. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Sports Medicine Weekly. My name is Steve Cashel, radio host of the Chicago Bulls. Soon I'll be joined by my co-host, Dr. Brian Cole, the head team physician for the Chicago Bulls and sports medicine specialist from Midwest Orthopedics at Rush and Rush University Medical Center. Thanks for joining us. We come your way each and every Saturday morning at 8:30, helping you with your sports medicine injuries and all the hot topics going on in sports medicine. So stay with us. Back to get it going right after this on ESPN Radio.
The Chicago Bulls, White Sox, and DePaul Blue Demons rely on Midwest Orthopedics at Rush for advanced orthopedic treatment. So can you. We are the team physicians for these Chicago teams, and we're ready to be on your healthcare team, too. Get expert care from these regional leaders at four Chicagoland locations. Learn more at rushortho.com. Midwest Orthopedics at Rush, your world-class team physicians. Do you face orthopedic surgery for a sports or work-related injury? Theratech Equipment is Chicagoland's trusted leader in providing continuous passive motion for home use. Theratech will demonstrate how you can have a speedier, less painful recovery using a CPM device delivered right to your home. Theratech Equipment, your winning team for fast, complete recovery. Visit homecpm.com.
You're listening to Sports Medicine Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back, everyone. Sports Medicine Weekly on this Saturday morning. Steve Cashel with Dr. Brian Cole. And so happy you're joining us. Season number four of our Sports Medicine Weekly program coming your way at a new time here in season four, 8:30 a.m. till 9 a.m. every Saturday morning. And net proceeds from this show, Sports Medicine Weekly, go to support orthopedic research at Rush through the Live Active Now .org fund. Dr. Cole, how much sleep do you get a night? I know it's different than me.
That's probably the most common question I get asked in the office, actually.
Is that right?
Patients. Not because I look tired, I think. I think they just wonder how we get it all done.
So absolutely.
I would say I'm probably five or six, but it's always interrupted. So
why is it interrupted?
I don't know. Maybe I'll get some answers today.
I was thinking of the phone's ringing the pager
just,
or something.
It's just life.
Doctors don't have pagers anymore, do they? You get texts.
Cell phone. No, I haven't had a pager in like 12 years. Yeah. I still have one partner who still has a pager.
Is that right?
It's the funniest thing.
Yeah, the pagers went the way of the Edsel, right?
You'd think he's a drug dealer. I don't think anyone even has pagers anymore.
Why is it interrupted? Just because you can't sleep comfortably?
No, I'll just wake up, you know? So I think that's a very common thing. So, you know, people have trouble either falling asleep or they get to sleep and then they wake up. And, you know, and this isn't going to be session is not going to be a psychological analysis of my sleep, but so much of sleep is just grounded in psychology. So we've only done one episode on sleep, and I think we could probably do one every other week.
Absolutely. It's fascinating. It really is.
Yeah. It's the crux of, in my mind, it's the crux of stability for our athletes, for you and for me. I mean, if you're not sleeping, it's a big problem.
I sleep very comfortably. I really do.
You fall asleep and stay asleep?
Yes, absolutely.
How many hours a night?
I try to get eight, but that's... now I'm thinking about it. My kids are up sometimes so early that I have to start trying to go to bed earlier because, you know, my older one pops up. And once I'm awake, I can't fall asleep again.
So if someone wakes you up in the middle of the night, you're done?
No, I shouldn't say that. In the morning, yeah. But I sleep a lot later than you. I'm just used to the late nights and everything.
Even on the weekends now, it's brutal. I mean, I'm up 6:30.
Is that right?
Potentially, but
I never see a 6:30. I shouldn't say that. Sometimes we have meetings in the morning and that.
Aren't you doing the golf thing early?
No. Nothing early broadcast-wise. Yeah. Just the insurance job and that sometimes early. But let's bring on our next guest because he's going to talk about sleep deprivation.
and related to sports and East Coast teams against West Coast teams, some of the disadvantages. Dr. Jason Ong is our guest from Rush University Medical Center, a PhD in sleep medicine and behavioral psychology. And Dr. Ong, thanks so much for joining us. And as Dr. Cole and I kind of prefaced, it's an interesting topic, I know, for our listeners, for us as well, hosting this show. So let me ask you first, if we can, about the time of day, how does it impact sleep and performance? For example, are East Coast teams, we're talking sports now, at a disadvantage when they have to travel and play a game on the West Coast?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, guys. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's been quite a few studies looking at this phenomenon. What they call it is something called circadian misalignment. What that means is the timing of your sleep is mismatched with the timing of that local time zone. So one of the most well-known studies was looking at Monday Night Football, and in particular looking at what happens when East Coast teams travel to the West Coast for Monday Night Football. Because if Monday Night Football is played at 7 p.m. local time on the West Coast, well, then it's starting at 10 p.m. local time on the East Coast. And what they found is that a lot of the teams traveling from the East Coast to the West Coast were actually at a disadvantage. And it was above and beyond just a home field advantage. And then they started looking at it, even adjusting for the point spread. So, for example, that was a way to equalize winning percentage and so forth, and they found that West Coast teams were still having advantage. And then they also looked at it relative to day games. So on Sunday, those games are during the day. And during the day games, there's no advantage.
I would think it would be opposite. The West Coast teams, I always think about that when maybe Seattle plays in Chicago, a noon start time, our time, right, Central time, and the Seattle team is coming from Seattle to play, and all of a sudden it's probably like 10 a.m. their time, right?
Yeah, but that's you think about it, that's a huge bonus.
Why?
Well, I would think because that's the best. I mean, 10 to 12 is probably not a big deal, but when the example he gave, which is, you know, 7 o'clock versus 10 o'clock.
If you're a night person or a morning person, I'd much rather play a basketball game or a sporting event at 10 o'clock at night rather than 10 a.m.
Yeah, maybe the difference is dampened out in a day game versus a night game when you're used to sleeping, you know, a normal schedule, right?
Right, yeah. So for most people, your activity is – your peak activity tends to happen earlier in the day.
Okay.
And so it tends to decline the later you get. So you're right, there's some differences. Morning types will usually do better in the morning. Evening types will probably do a little bit better in the evening. But when you're going to an extreme, like, for example, in this East Coast, West Coast for Monday Night Football, that's when it seems to have a detriment on performance.
Interesting.
And it seems to relate to outcomes of games.
Well, let me ask you a basic question. Is there a direct association with decreased performance and insufficient sleep? I mean, you alluded to this research, but is that a given?
Well, it's kind of complicated. It depends on what you mean by insufficient sleep.
So, yeah, well, I mean, I guess we should define what sufficient sleep is. Is there an answer for that?
Well, it's individualized, but if you look at an average, most people will need about 7 to 8 hours of sleep. When you start to get below 6 hours of sleep, that's usually related to more sleep deprivation, insufficient sleep.
And what are the consequences on performance? What does it show?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, is it an issue of endurance? Is it accuracy? And I guess it's going to be sport dependent, but if someone was sleep deprived, you know, so let's say they're used to getting their 7 to 8 and then they're going through this period where they're still asking they're being asked to perform at an exceptionally high level, mm-hmm. but they're unable to get the sleep that they are accustomed to getting, what might happen?
Right. So, I mean, I'll start off by answering it in terms of what happens if there's total sleep deprivation. So let's say someone pulls an all-nighter. In those situations, usually it's the speed of performance that's affected more so than the accuracy of performance.
But that's cognitive stuff probably, right?
No, it's a little bit of motor as well. I mean, that's a good point. So the other thing that we find is that total sleep deprivation tends to impact it tends to impact mood first, and then more of the cognitive tasks, and then after that, the motor tasks. So generally, people are more sensitive in terms of endurance tests. That's where some of the differences will start to play out.
So we deal with a situation where our guys for basketball, okay,
mm-hmm.
It is very common to play a night game, and let's say they go west, and they play a game, right?
It's a little rare to play a back-to-back east to west. Now the NBA
we did
rule,
that after the lockout. It was brutal.
Games. True.
That was just insane.
And let me say this for our listeners. There is an NBA rule that the NBA team must be in. If you're traveling, the NBA team must be in the city they're playing in the night before.
That's right.
You can't. It used to be back in the old days you could fly the morning of.
Right.
But there's an NBA rule, so that's why the Bulls, as an example, will have to leave about midnight from O'Hare and fly to an East Coast city. Okay, and you lose an hour. Let's say it's a 2.5. Let's say you're playing in Miami, which is common. All right?
Right.
You could play in Miami or Boston or somewhere. It could be a 2.5 hour, 3 hour flight. Plus, you lose an hour. So you're really getting into 4 a.m. By the time you get on the bus to go to the hotel and
right.
they get the luggage on and everything, you might not be getting to bed till 5 a.m. Our guest is Dr. Jason Ong from Rush University Medical Center, talking about sleep medicine and behavioral psychology and sleep deprivation. I'm Steve Cashel, Dr. Brian Cole alongside. This is Sports Medicine Weekly, season number 4, coming at you every Saturday morning here on ESPN Radio.
So as we age, I've commonly heard that we need, our bodies physiologically need less sleep. Is that a myth or is that a fact?
Depends on who you ask. Okay. What tends to happen is that we sleep less. Now, it's a little bit debatable in terms of whether or not that means the brain just can't generate the same amount of sleep or that we do indeed need less sleep as we age. But as people get older, once they get about to 65, 70, they're only sleeping about 6 to 6.5 hours a night.
Does that mean I'm sleeping like a 90-year-old if I'm doing like 5 to 6?
Are you ever tired? We started with the,
I don't know.
Used to 5-6 hours of sleep
you know,
a night.
You know,
what's
I'll
the most you ever get? Do you ever get to sleep on the weekends? And I hate that word, sleep in. What do you mean sleep in? What is sleeping
know.
In? I hate that
I
word. My wife says, oh, you slept in. I said, slept in the what? You mean I slept later? I slept later.
I feel like I do better if I, and this will be a good question, I think I do better if I have a nap. In other words, I'm kind of done after 6.5, 7 hours.
Really?
And I just want to get up. It wasn't always like
good
that.
Good for
I mean,
you.
But no, it hasn't always, I mean, I used to want to sleep in. Now I just can't do it, you know? So I'm, but if I could take a nap and get myself to wind down, that's the greatest thing ever for me. I mean,
and that's
in medical school, I used to be always tired. And on like a Friday night, I would literally just put my head down on my hands and sleep for 10 minutes, and I can go for 4 more hours.
Really?
I mean, so-called power nap. I don't know if that's biologically, is that real?
Yeah, actually, when they look at the timing of naps, they do find that this idea of a power nap does hold some water, and that if you nap about 10 or 20 minutes, it seems to be more beneficial than longer naps. And the other thing is the timing of the nap is important. If you take your nap between 7 to 9 hours from the time that you normally wake up.
Wait, slow down. I want to learn something here. So
right.
seven to nine hours from you wake up, say
from
you wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, you get
say
up.
Say you wake up at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
Between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m., you hit a little dip in
yeah.
your natural rhythm.
Right.
And if you time your nap to about 20 or 30 minutes at that time, it's not likely to impact your nighttime sleep. So that
See, it's
night.
Interesting. If you spoke with, we have a sort of a food expert who's eating expert who's always on our show, and I've always associated that dip with, you know, glucose and, you know, insulin right. and so forth and dietary issues. Do you think it plays a role?
They did a study on that looking
okay.
to try to tease out that.
Good.
They did find it was a circadian rhythm, so the natural dip in your biological clock that happens that has a stronger effect than just the effect of eating and having a meal.
All right, so let me just go back to the travel thing for a second. Do you have any recommendations? Have you been asked that before by any by athletic organizations so forth? Is this an area? I have to imagine this is an area of intense study because we're always dealing with performance issues and how to just get the edge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I know you can't answer this in 30 seconds or less, but are there any broad strokes that we can think about in managing our athletes, especially when we're dealing with this East West Coast issue?
Right. I think the best way to adjust to a new time zone is to get exposure to light in the morning, because that's the main cue your brain has for resetting its biological clock. And for some people, if you take a nap in the time that we talked about, that can also help as well. So I think that combination of things can be quite helpful for people as they adjust to a new time zone.
And Dr. Jason Ong is our guest from Rush University Medical Center, a sleep specialist. And Dr. Ong, it's also about the REM sleep, right? The REM, that's why the nap is good for 20 minutes, because you really don't get into that full REM sleep yet?
It's actually not REM sleep. It's slow wave sleep. It's a deep sleep. Because
okay.
the deep sleep actually kicks in at about 45 minutes or
Does
so
it?
After you fall asleep. So when people take a nap about an hour, when they wake up, they're usually very groggy.
Yeah.
There's a certain thing that we call sleep inertia,
mm-hmm.
and that's the idea that, you know, sleepiness is still kind of in motion. So
right.
when you wake up from that, when they do tests on people, they don't do very well.
So a shorter nap.
Shorter nap avoids that because you don't get into the deep sleep.
And then what's the REM?
The REM usually kicks in later than that.
So later than that, okay.
Right, right.
Interesting.
Yeah, REM usually occurs about 60 to 90 minutes after you fall asleep. And REM is associated more with cognitive and emotional restoration, emotional processing. It's the stage that we associate with dreaming. And also for memory consolidation, so if you're doing a task and you start to deprive people of REM sleep, they've also done this in animals, it's harder for them to consolidate what they've learned.
You've been awesome. Thank you. I can't wait to do another segment with you.
All right. Thank you for inviting me.
That's Dr. Jason Ong from Rush University Medical Center talking about a subject that Dr. Cole and I love to talk about, sleep deprivation. I usually get some good sleep. Dr. Cole, not as much, but he's always wired. He's ready to go. 13 surgeries a day. That's why you're not sleeping. You're thinking about the surgeries, right?
No, it just keeps you up. It's like playing video games.
Well, let me ask you a final question as we say goodbye to Dr. Ong. All right. You're doing a surgery on a Derrick Rose. Because we know you did both of Derek's knees. Do you sleep well that night before, or is it just like any other patient?
No, you typically don't sleep for 2 years after you do the surgery.
You won't answer that, will you? Take me back to those, that Friday night before you did the Saturday surgery.
You go through every single detail in your head. You know, it's like
before you go to sleep. Can you sleep comfortably though?
It's like planning a flight. Honestly, Steve, I don't know if I ever sleep comfortably.
Is that right?
You're asking the wrong guy.
You're a good doctor,
To call. Thank you. I may have to call Dr. Ong.
All right. Let's take a break. It's Sports Medicine Weekly. Our show continues right after these messages.
On ESPN Radio.
Sprain your ankle playing basketball? Back pain keeping you up at night? Suffered an injury on the job? At Accelerated Physical Therapy, we can help. We are a Chicago-based physical therapy company that specializes in post-surgical ailments, workers' compensation rehab, and regular old aches and pains. We are committed to returning our patients to better health and dedicated to providing the best patient experience possible. For more information or to schedule a free injury screen with an Accelerated Physical Therapist, contact 800-474-8300 or visit acceleratedrehab.com. Free injury screen, not for federally funded payers. Remember when playing a round of golf or shooting hoops with your buddies didn't bother your knees? It's time to get back in the game without surgery or more pain pills. Ask your doctor about the Osir Unloader 1. It's an easy-to-wear knee brace that is clinically proven to improve mobility and decrease the need for pain medication. Try it out and feel the difference when you win again. To learn more, call 877-265-2005 or visit www.osir.com/kneepain. That's osur.com/kneepain.
You're listening to Sports Medicine Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back, everyone, on this Saturday morning, Sports Medicine Weekly. You can visit our new blog at smwhome.net to access prior shows, interviews, and other valuable content. Or the website can be reached by going to sportsmedicineweekly.com. I'm Steve Cashel with Dr. Brian Cole. He is the team physician for the Chicago Bulls and from Midwest Orthopedics at Rush University Medical Center, and a specialist in ACL injuries. And Doc, asked all the time from our listeners, hey, you guys never talk enough about ACLs, and it's such a hot topic. We're seeing it in men, women, the athletes, the whole thing. What are some of the risk factors for ACL and injuries, and how do ACL injuries happen?
You know, Steve, this has been an area that we become have such a heightened level of awareness because it seems as though, you know, we noticed it in the NBA that we thought there was sort of this spike in the number of injuries, and we're certainly seeing it, you know, a 4 to 8 time increase in females. So it's something we're thinking an awful lot about. And we've actually become very interested at Midwest Orthopedics. We're doing, we've designed, and David's been very involved. We're going to have an excellent guest here looking at functional sports assessments to actually identify, we take the identified risk factors and then assess these after, for example, ACL reconstruction. But you can do it before this to assess for injury risk. And one of the most common things that we see are individuals who have really strong quadricep muscles and weak hamstrings. In fact, we're doing a really cool study where we're taking 60 of the last ACL injuries in the NBA. We have all their videos of them getting injured.
There have been enough of them, haven't there?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. But we have all the videos now over the last, say, 10 years from the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Soccer. And we're doing an analysis of how these guys are tearing their ACL.
Do you know offhand, Dr. Cole, more in one sport than the other?
Generally soccer.
Really?
Yeah.
More than basketball?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, most definitely.
And more non-contact or contact?
They're almost all non-contact.
Football. It's amazing.
Football. Most basketball is non-contact. I'd have to break it out. Football will have a fairly high percentage of contact, but it still is mostly non-contact. And the issue, interesting thing is, it's hard to, you look at these videos, we slow them down because you could argue some of them are contact. You know, the classic contact is a huge blow to the knee that makes it go into an extreme position to tear the ACL, but what it really is associated with is an aberration. In other words, an individual is doing something, they do some unexpected movement with a direction change or a deceleration, and there's a disconnect, and there may be some contact involved with that, but it may not be the physical contact that causes the injury, but rather the physical contact that throws them an aberration where they can't protect their joint. And those are things you can't really control. That's all about timing and issues, and we've talked about that a little bit. But the one thing that stands out that's modifiable, the things that you and I can change, are correcting that differential, that the difference between having really, really strong quads and weak hamstrings.
Okay, so let's bring in our quad expert, right? David Heidlaw from Athletico, an athletic trainer. Athletico does such a wonderful job, big part of our show here on Sports Medicine Weekly. And David, thanks so much for joining us. You're also a big part of Oak Park River Forest High School, and you've worked with the McDonald's All-American basketball teams, and it's great to have you in studio with us, David. What is quad dominance? Dr. Cole mentioned it, and would you explain it for us?
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. So quad dominance is basically an imbalance in the strength of a muscle group in the front part of the leg called the quadriceps that run across the front of the thigh, and then their counterparts on the backside, the hamstrings, and to a degree your glutes, which are the muscles on kind of the back part of your hips that kind of wrap around to the side. And a lot of times what we found, as Dr. Cole was saying, is that people that have ACL injuries have this big disparity in how strong their quadriceps are, but they're not really activating or utilizing their hamstrings or their glutes at all. And why that's important is, you know, the quadriceps are a great source of power when you're, you know, looking to do something athletic like jumping or you know, accelerating, decelerating. But when you're looking to do like a more powerful move, like a jump or something like that, or a sudden change in direction, the quadriceps aren't that great at stabilizing the knee, while the glutes, which are those muscles in the hips, and then to a degree the hamstrings, tend to have a little bit more ability to help protect the knee and kind of keep it in a more proper position where you're not putting it at risk for an injury.
David, how does quad dominance increase the risk of a knee injury?
Yeah, so you know, kind of like I was saying, when we start seeing that type of disparity, when the muscles in the front of the quad are too strong, you know, a lot of times we're missing out on some of the stabilizing strength that we see in the muscles in the back of the hips and the glutes and the hamstrings. And that lack of stability, you know, especially, you know, when you're concentrating on, you know, like cutting to avoid a defender, you know, the loss of that stability can lead to a catastrophic injury, unfortunately.
Wow, interesting.
But the other thing, which is, you know, so hamstring strength may be protective to an ACL tear. So there's a dynamic component that if your quads, so if you think about how your quads function, they're over the front of your thigh, goes over your kneecap, and inserts in the tibia, the shin bone, right? Mm-hmm. And the ACL is a ligament that's designed to restrain or prevent the tibia from shifting forward. So it's the anterior cruciate ligament, and it's in the center of, in the inside of the knee, within the middle of the knee, and it connects the femur, the thigh bone, to the tibia, right? Okay. And its job, it has a rotation prevention job. It prevents those two bones from rotating, but in a classic sense, it prevents a translation of the shin bone, the tibia, relative to the femur. Does that make sense as
a little
I describe
bit.
It?
Okay.
So, you know, the knee bends, but it's the tibia
right.
relative to the femur that, so if you think about your quads, it pulls on your tibia. It actually has a strong, very strong anterior force. It pulls the tibia forward, pulling on the ACL.
Wow.
So you can imagine that without some degree of balance, that there's a strength deficit between the muscles that pull on the shin bone, which pull against the ACL, versus those that protect it, which are the hamstrings. So we do a lot of hamstring exercises after ACL reconstructions because we're trying to protect that graft or the ligament. But really the thing we need to be doing is, on a prevention point of view, is actually identify who's really quad dominant? And maybe are you aware of like percentages and things like that? Do you get that objective, or is this just sort of a, this is how we gauge our prehab and our prevention programs? Yeah. We just want to strengthen the hamstrings.
You know, generally when we're looking at it, like especially on the field where we don't have, you know, access to, you know, like, you know, advanced like Biodex equipment or anything like that. A lot of times we're just kind of looking at form, which would be signs of quad dominance, which would be, you know, when someone goes down into a squatting position, do their knees extend way past their toes, which would be a sign that they're utilizing their quads more than anything else. When they're landing, do they tend to land with their legs in a straightened position? You know, that tells us they're trying to absorb that impact with their quads instead of with the hamstrings or the glutes, you know, as well as, you know, other signs, you know, similar to that.
Right. Females tend to land with lower flexion angles.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so in other words, they're so quad dominant that when they jump and they land, and if I'm wrong, correct me, that they don't flex as much of the hip or the knee.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you watch females do it to males, that's if you watch videos of how they when they tear their ACLs or when they're just running, they have totally different motor patterns. It's fascinating.
Yeah, when you see them come to have to like suddenly decelerate, say there's a turnover, you know, on the soccer field and someone has to stop suddenly and turn around, when they decelerate, instead of, you know, landing with a bent knee where it's kind of soft and cushioned and kind of a longer period of time to decelerate and change direction, a lot of times they'll land with a straight leg, almost like driving a peg into the ground. Which, you know, if you're on a field that's unsteady or, you know, your muscles don't fire in the right sequence, can put the ACL at quite a bit of risk.
David Heidloff is our guest from Athletico and Athletic Trainer. I'm Steve Cashel with Dr. Brian Cole at Sports Medicine Weekly on this Saturday morning. Almost need to wrap this up, but David, let me ask you, Dr. Cole, you mentioned, so strengthening the hamstring, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, you know, one thing that we always spend a lot of time working on is, you know, some hamstring isolation work, but getting people to mentally focus on firing their hamstrings when they're doing more athletic movements. So working with them, you know, when they're doing squats, when they're doing jumping, and just having them mentally concentrate on firing the hamstrings, firing the glutes in conjunction with the quads, to not only, you know, help reduce their chance of injury, but a lot of times we find that people almost get like a performance enhancement benefit out of it, by utilizing multiple muscle groups to perform an action instead of relying so heavily on just one.
And let's give the Athletico website. You guys do a lot of work in this, I know.
Yeah, yeah. It's just www.athletico.com. Our blog is there. There is a full blog post right up about this topic, about quad dominance. There's some exercise ideas there on the website for you to look at that can help activate your hamstrings and help reduce this chance of injury.
And the key is to become less quad dominant.
Or just strengthen your hamstrings.
Really? Okay.
Better way to think about it.
Yeah.
Interesting. David, thanks so much for being with us on Sports Medicine Weekly. Interesting stuff.
Thanks again.
All right. Back with more of our program, SMW, right after this.
On ESPN Radio.
Integrated Orthopedics is Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana's premier provider of thermal and compression therapy devices for people recovering from sports-related injuries or orthopedic surgical procedures. To learn more about the benefits of thermal and compression therapy and to determine if it's right for you, please contact your healthcare professional. For further information about Integrated Orthopedics products and services, visit us on the web at www.integratedorthopedics.net.
Sometimes life throws you for a loop. You get injured on the job, tear up a knee playing sports, or are forced to undergo surgery. Then what? Fortunately for those battling to get back to their best, there's ATI Physical Therapy. Our expertly trained therapists provide individualized treatment plans designed specifically to reduce pain, improve mobility, and reduce future injuries. You do have a choice in physical therapy. Visit ATIPT.com or stop in one of ATI's 80 Chicago area clinics to experience the difference firsthand. ATI, taking physical therapy to a higher level. Get there.
You're listening to Sports Medicine Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Sports Medicine Weekly is being brought to you in part by ATI Physical Therapy for the highest quality care in a friendly environment. By Oser Americas, orthopedic technology for a life without limitations. By Integrated Orthopedics, accelerate your healing. By Athletico Physical Therapy and Occupational Therapy, providers of physical therapy to all Chicago professional sports teams. And by Karen Malkin Health Care. counseling. Transform your health one bite at a time. Well, many thanks to our producer, Peter Cohen, as well as David Cole for managing our website and all of his behind-the-scenes work. We also thank Samantha Smith from Midwest Orthopedics at Rush and Teresa Ann Seeger and Will Haskell for their sales and marketing efforts. For Dr. Brian Cole, my name is Steve Cashel saying so long. Thanks again for listening to Sports Medicine Weekly here each Saturday morning at 8:30 a.m. only on ESPN 1000.
The preceding program was a paid advertisement. The views reflected are not necessarily the views of ESPN 1000.
Someday, people will say, I knew Ty, Ryan, Chase, Dylan, when he was kart racing in 38th place. Someday, people will say, he's on a roll, on fire. Someday, people will shake their heads and say, man, that kid sure did grow up fast.
Names are made here. The NASCAR Nationwide Series at Iowa, Sunday at 1:30 Eastern on ESPN.